Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Gary Lindbergh. Gary is the author of the upcoming book, The Elvis Letters. He has lived with the letters for over 30 years since being first introduced to them in 1988. Gary has spent 40 years as a filmmaker, with the last 10 years writing and publishing books. As an author, he has written four consecutive Amazon number one best-selling books. One was the Shekinah Legacy, The Sons of Zadok, Deeper and Deeper, and Ollie's Cloud. He's also, as an award-winning filmmaker, he's written, produced, and or directed countless corporate films, TV commercials, music videos, and entertainment movies. He co-wrote and produced That Was Then, This Is Now, a Paramount feature film starring Emilio Estevez and Morgan Freeman. Gary has won over 100 national and international awards for his work in media, including two grand awards from the New York International Film Festival. In The Elvis Letters, Gary has written a captivating account of original letters written by the king, with supporting letters from his closest male friends. Gary, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I was up, and this is my hand to God, 4:30 in the morning, I was up reading your book last night. It's like, wow, I didn't know. You know, I wanted to kind of swallow it whole. For those of you out there who are interested in celebrity history and celebrity stories, wow, you've got to go and get this book. This is a doozy. So, Gary, I don't know where to ask you to begin with this. I know. Tell us a little bit about you. Obviously, you're very accomplished. You're a entrepreneur. You've created many media-based businesses, and you've sold them and gone on to other things. You're an award winner. You're a movie maker. You're so many, many things. What would you like to tell us a little bit about you? And then, please, we have to hear the story how this book evolved, because it's really like something out of a movie.
Yes. Of course, movies in my life.
Yeah.
Until now.
Right. So tell us about you and the whole backstory behind how you became involved in this absolutely captivating book.
Well, my checkered career, I think it shows that I'm not very good at keeping a job. I have a low threshold of boredom. But the way this project came about is an old friend of mine, a well-known, highly renowned relief sculptor named Bill Mack, gave me a call one day. He and I had been friends for many years. We had done some business together, and I had done some film work for Bill that had done a good job. And so he called me late one night, after midnight, and said, "Hi, Gary." And I said, "Well, Bill, you're calling kind of late." And he said he had something he wanted me to take a look at. He had gotten involved with a cache of handwritten letters by one of the world's greatest celebrities. And he made me play a guessing game about who it was. And I couldn't get it. I thought, you know, well, Frank Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe. And finally, I said, "Well, you got to give me a clue." And he said, "Think royalty." So I thought, Queen Elizabeth, you know, et cetera. And he said, no, entertainment. I finally guessed Elvis Presley. And he said he had original handwritten letters that had some content that was almost beyond belief, but that he had had the letters authenticated by a world famous authenticator of handwritten documents. And was convinced that these letters were genuine, and he wanted to take the letters and figure out a way of producing a book. So we got together at his studio in Minneapolis, and he shared the letters with me after I signed a non-disclosure agreement, and he let me read the letters, and it turns out there were four different collections of letters. One of them, about 65 of the handwritten letters were written by and signed by Elvis Presley. Over 100 of the letters were signed by, handwritten letters again, were signed by Marlon Brando. There was another collection of about 80 letters, which had been written by the singer Tom Jones, and another smaller collection, less than 50 of these letters, were written by another famous singer named Harry Belafonte. They were all a close circle of friends, and all of the letters had been written to one woman, the same woman, who was a person named Carmen Montez, and she served as their spiritual advisor, kind of a guide for them. And to Carmen, they all shared deeply confessional material about their lives, their emotions, what they were going through, the problems their other friends were having. They sought advice from her, and they also talked about some of the events that were going on in their lives that were truly shocking. So that's how this whole thing came to be.
Wow. So here you were doing your thing, and you get a call from your artist friend. And how did he come to have in his possession these letters? Where did they come from?
Good question. The letters, which all had been written to this woman named Carmen Montez, had been kept by her. She had kept all of their letters. And obviously, from the letters, she had also bonded to these letters. She had insisted that all of these charges of hers, Elvis, Harry, Tom, and Marlon, interact with her primarily through writing letters to her. She wanted handwritten letters from them. She would intuitively do some handwriting analysis, and she believed that she could intuit more of the feelings that they were having, even beyond just the words they were using. And so they all complied, and they wrote letters to her. Elvis was not known to write many letters, but he wrote longhand to her, and his writing improved over time, I can say. She kept all of these letters that had been sent to her in confidence, and she eventually died intestate. And the state of California took her belongings. She had no heirs, and they put them up for auction. And her very best friend, another woman named Carmen, but named Carmen Rayburn, went to the auction and bought a small collection of items that would remind her of her good friend, Carmen Montez. And among those possessions that she bought were three suitcases, which were claimed to contain clothing, although clearly nobody had looked inside. So she bought those and a mirror and a lamp and some other things, and she paid by check, got a receipt, which we have in the book, and she took everything home. And it was quite a while before she thought to actually look inside the suitcases. But when she did, guess what she found? She found a collection of nearly 300 handwritten letters by these four celebrities, many of them still with postmarked envelopes, the ones that had been mailed. Some of them clearly had been couriered to her, hand-delivered. And so she started reading these letters. I could imagine her reading those letters the same way I was in Bill's studio. And I'm sure she was as shocked at the content of some of these letters as I was. I can remember reading several of the letters in Bill's office and having tears come into my eyes as I read the heart-wrenching events that had taken place and some of the shocking things that had been done to Elvis and to Marlon and some of the others. It was, as I said before, almost beyond belief. But here they were being described in detail by these principals themselves.
Wow. Now, in the book, you actually made a copy of the receipt that Ralph Rayburn, who was the nephew he had purchased this at auction, but there's no reference to there's a retailer's permit number, but there's no reference to what estate the material came from. See, I'm playing the devil's advocate. I'll tell you why. Because I read this book and I said, oh my God, how could this? I mean, most people, and this is what's going to, I think, make this a huge bestseller, and most people are going to read this and say, this is beyond belief. Okay, this is quite a tale. And when you go through the book and you look at the small details, you question it. And yet, as you march through this and we start to put together what other people have written in other books and mm-hmm. some of the observations about some of the individuals involved, it seems really plausible that this is for real. Now, you did, you and this other gentleman, I guess, did a tremendous amount of authenticating and legal work, talking with lawyers and making sure that copyright infringement, you were contacting all these people's relatives and you were doing all kinds of things, yeah, to really establish this as a legitimate book. And it took many years to actually get this done. So you want to tell us about that journey of, you know, what you went through to, you know, get the book into the condition of authenticity that you feel comfortable with publishing?
Yes, originally I was contracted to help produce a book out of this material. Eventually, over the years, because of just an immense entanglement of legal issues, people dropped out of the process one by one. They came to the conclusion that there was no way we could legally ever publish the content, let alone the actual words of these letters. That there were rights of privacy that we could be violating, rights of publicity for all the contracts these people had for their likenesses and their names and their brands. There was copyright infringement for the letters themselves, which was an extremely sticky issue. Just in brief, the way copyright of letters works, if I write you a letter, you own the physical document that I send you. But I still own a copyright to all the words that I put on that piece of paper. And so you can't publish the words that I wrote. You could burn the letter. You could sell the letter if I became famous. You could display it in a gallery. You could frame it and hang it on the wall. But you can't publish the words. And so we had to find a way of communicating all of that material legally without violating the copyright of all of these individuals and their estates for those who have died, and to do it without inviting a lot of lawsuits. I didn't want to spend the rest of my life in court.
Well, and now, two of the people involved are still alive.
Two of them are
still alive. So when you contacted them and said, look, we've got letters here, you said no one replied to your attempts to, you know, talk to them about these letters and discuss the content in terms of the ownership and the copyright.
That's right. We agreed right off the bat when I resurrected this project, which had been abandoned for a few years because of all these legal issues, and decided to tackle it one more time through a small publishing company. We decided that we just wanted to do everything the right way. We didn't want to violate laws. We didn't want to violate people's privacy. And so we felt that the right thing to do after we had written the manuscript in what we believed was a very legal way under the auspices of a very experienced literary attorney, we decided to send a letter to the estates of those people who are deceased and to the actual individuals themselves, if they were alive, and their managers. So we sent what's called estoppel letters to them and gave them a period of 4 months to respond. We said, hey, we're happy to have you read and review the full manuscript of the book that we've written. We're happy to share with you the actual letters for the people whose rights you control. All you have to do is notify us, and we'll set all of that up. And if you have comments, we want to hear them, and we want to adjust things. Interestingly, we never heard back from any of the estates or the managers or the individuals themselves to take us up on that. And we sent these letters out in a highly legal way, or they were certified mail. So we have receipts that they were all described. So for various reasons, none of them wanted to review this material. So that, of course, helped us establish a legal defense, but we also felt that we had gone out of our way to share all of this content with the people who had, you know, written the content or had controlled the estates of these people. So we did everything we could to solicit their response and to even interview them and get their comments about things, and they refused to participate in any way. Everybody's free to decide for themselves what that means, but we could not get their cooperation or their participation.
And of the four people mentioned, none of those people, their estates, their representatives, responded at all to you. That is highly, highly unusual.
I can't tell you how afraid I was when the attorney came to us and said, this is a step. If you want to do this the right way, if you want to honor the process and make sure that everything is done legally and above board, this is how we have to do it. We have to notify all of these people. And I was scared to death because we had already invested a lot of money in legal fees and in research and writing. And we had, you know, we had gone many years trying to figure out how to do this. And I was very afraid that somebody would contact us and say, hey, we want you to change everything, or we want you to cease and desist and not publish this book. You know, their response could be any of the above. And I thought, man, you know, we could be stopped in our tracks on this project at this point if we do this. But on the other hand, it was the right thing to do for a host of reasons, and I'm glad we did it. I was flabbergasted that not one of these parties contacted us. They didn't even contact us.
And you were certain that you had the right contact information for them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the letters that our attorney sent out were all, we have receipts that they were all received by proper parties. So I can't explain why, but I can report that we made every attempt to make this available, this material available to all of the proper parties, including Priscilla Presley. And we were not asked to share the content.
Wow. Well, did you contact his granddaughter, or his daughter, actually, which was Lisa Presley?
Lisa Marie.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you didn't hear from her either?
Nobody.
Wow. No Marlon Brando estate, no... Tom Jones, no. Who's the other one that, well, Marlon Brando and...
Harry Belafonte.
Yeah, but it's Marlon Brando and Elvis that are deceased. The other two are alive, and they didn't even respond. They didn't even care what was in the letters. I mean, it's kind of like, boy, I'd want to know what was in those letters if it was going to be used in a book, don't you think?
If I had written letters and somebody had them and was writing a book and offered to share everything they had written and asked me to comment and invited me to inspect the letters after all those years, I can't imagine that I wouldn't have, but here we are.
I know. It's a good thing that you've got all kinds of backup and all kinds of insurance against this, because I believe when this thing gets published, it's going to be quite explosive, actually. Well, we're going to take a break. We've got, you know, we've hit that mark where we have to take a little commercial break. But when we come back, we want to talk about, we've talked about Bill Mack, the artist, and how he engaged you in this. And then we want to talk about this gentleman, Robert Slatzer, who was supposed to actually, do the research and put everything in order and actually produce the book and what happened there. So when we come back, Gary, let's talk about this this venture moving forward, because it's really quite a story, very, very intriguing. listeners, don't go away. We're going to be back in a moment with Gary Lindberg, the author of The Elvis Letters.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And we're back with Mr. Gary Lindberg. Gary is the author of The Elvis Letters, as well as 4 number one best-selling books, and he is regaling us with the tale of this remarkable book that he has been involved in, the writing of this book, for almost 30 years, which is in itself quite a story. So, Gary, before the break, we were talking about, okay, so you get a call from Bill Mack, and, you know, he kind of gets you excited and interested in this whole thing. And then this other gentleman who was an award-winning author, he was a number one best-selling author, the second Carmen, who had the letters in her possession after having her nephew purchase them at auction, she wanted him to write the book because she thought, being who he was, that he might be able to get it done and that she could buy an island, a paradise that she had dreamt about for some time. So please tell us what happened with Robert Slatter, and how did you get involved then with, you know, working on the book?
Well, the first thing that Carmen Rayburn did, you're absolutely correct, was to start having great imaginings of what a wonderful book these letters would turn into, or could turn into. And to do that, she needed to have somebody who could write the book. And she had met a short time earlier a gentleman named Robert Slater. And Bob had written a famous best-selling, international best-selling book about the death of Marilyn Monroe. And he wrote it because he claimed that he had been Marilyn Monroe's first husband, that shortly after she became MGM's new sex goddess, he and Marilyn, being schoolyard buddies, ran off to Mexico City and got married and came back, and the studio was unhappy with their new sex star being a married woman. So they forced them to go back and get an annulment. So they were only married, he said, for about a week. But he also claimed that they remained lifelong friends until her death, and that he was with her shortly before she died, which of course was a very mysterious death. And so he claimed to have a lot of information nobody else had about Marilyn's life and her death.
However, and I have to stick this however in there, no photos, no marriage certificate that he claims was ripped up. He had some kind of a certificate that had their names on it, but who knows what that is. And there was no documentation, no record keeping. It was as if it was obliterated. And I said to you, okay, if I'm a skeptic and I'm reading this book, I'm saying, whoa, now what we've got here is we've got yet another mysterious, series of events. We've got this man who wrote the book Life and Curious Death of Marilyn Monroe. He's claiming to have married her, and yet there is no evidence whatsoever that ever took place.
That's right. And his career was, for the rest of his life, was highly controversial because of those claims. But when Carmen met him, she believed he was telling the truth. And so she signed a contract with him and gave him a percentage of whatever royalties a future book would earn in exchange for him writing a book based on these letters. And it all seemed fairly simple at the time. This is before people understood that there was all these profound copyright issues involved. My job became one of managing Bob in the writing process. And it turns out that Bob was suffering from some illnesses at the time, so he was partly incapacitated. He also had, I would say, quite a serious drinking problem. And so my job was to keep him working. And after several weeks of trying to do that, frankly, we found that he was never going to be able to accomplish his task. So Bill Mack offered to buy out his contract, paid him off, gave him quite a large sum of money just so he would be gone. And eventually Bob, several years later, he died from his illnesses. very nice man, but he was just not in a position to be able to fulfill his contract. I was then brought in to take his place and to write the book. And so I developed an outline for the book, and Bill Mack and I went to New York, and we shopped it to all the big publishing houses, Simon & Schuster, Macmillan, et cetera. And they were all terribly excited about it. But in the end, they were all very, very fearful of the potential legal entanglements. Some of them had been sued by Elvis Presley Enterprises before, which was known to be highly litigious. And they didn't want to go through that again. So eventually they all backed out.
Mm.
With no publishers left in line and with nothing but threats from these various estates and their managers and all sorts of legal issues, the project slowly eroded and was eventually abandoned.
Which is why it has taken so long, I believe, for the book to actually have legs, as they say. And to have a life. Now, you are an author, and you have had many projects, and one of them is a very successful publishing house that you are very much still involved with. And it became through that, I believe, that you found a venue to bring the book forward once you had gotten all the legal issues and the copyright issues and all of the other aspects kind of straightened out. Is that correct?
That's correct. I had certainly, once I had my own publishing company, I was certainly tempted. You know, the Elvis Project was never far from my mind. It's the kind of thing that sticks with you. It's always in your subconscious, even when you're not directly thinking about it. And, but, you know, the legal issues still were confounding, and it was, I give my partner, Ian Graham Leask, credit for being bold enough to suggest to me that the two of us who owned the publishing company actually take the risk and seek out a legal path. Things change over a period of years, and we thought, well, maybe the time would be right now. It didn't be any less difficult, I can assure you. But we did find some resources in the legal community who had a depth of experience that were able to help us find that path and worked with us virtually every word of the way as we put this book together, where we were confident that we could legally write this book, release this information to the world, and get it published.
Right. Well, the moment is upon you. Yes. This is about to be distributed momentarily as we speak, really.
November 1st is the release date for this book.
Right. Right. Which is like, wow. Literally, you talk about timing. So, all right, so we've established the fact that we now know that what you have is an explosive book about one of the most beloved celebrities in the definitely of the last decade and some of this century and some of this century. So, we know that this is happening. What is it? What are the stories or the content that you feel will be helpful for people to know about Elvis? And how do you see his other friendships with Harry Belafonte and Tom Jones as, you know, enhancing or embellishing or supporting this new information?
Well, I think let me address the friendships first. Elvis's friendship with Marlon Brando, primarily, but also with Tom Jones and Harry Belafonte, a little bit less so, are kind of surprising because the world has never known these individuals to be close friends. And so just that fact alone is rather startling to a lot of people. And we've had people who have, beta readers who have read the book and said, well, this can't be true because nobody's ever heard that Marlon and Elvis were close friends. Well, the fact is we have these authenticated letters from both of them demonstrating that they were close friends. So the world has been wrong all of this time. This information simply was not known before this.
Mm-hmm.
I was so impressed with how close these friendships were. These people really went to bat for each other. They went out of their way to support each other. They sought help for each other in a variety of ways, much of which is reported in the book. And I think to some degree, that's what this book is about. It's about an amazing bond between these individuals that lasted, well, for 5 or 6 years anyway, during the period that these letters were written. And they went to such extraordinary lengths that, well, as one example, Marlon Brando, who was never a particularly religious person, wasn't sure that he really believed in God, actually went to a church and prayed for Elvis when he was very sick.
Wow.
For Marlon Brando, that's a remarkable thing to do for a friend. He wanted nothing to be held back. If that would work and help his friend get better, he was even willing to pray for Elvis. And I found that a remarkably stunning revelation in one of his letters. Of course, he did many other practical things as well. He went to Elvis's home because he suspected that Colonel Tom Parker, the rather unscrupulous manager of Elvis Presley, was doing some other things that were even more unscrupulous than bad business practices. He believed that the colonel might be putting chemical substances in some of the food around Elvis's home.
Wow.
So he actually took a sample of some food from the kitchen at Elvis's home, because he was at Elvis's house quite often, and took it to a chemist and had it analyzed. And they discovered that in a bottle of Sucoril, a sweetener, they found a slow-acting acid that if you drink enough of it, if you put a little bit more than average amount of this in a cup of coffee, it would have an effect on one's vocal cords. Of course, that would be a very bad thing for a singer like Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Question. Who would do this kind of a thing? Would the colonel do this? This is one of the mysteries. You have to recall that Elvis Presley is the colonel's sole breadwinner. He's making millions of dollars, and the colonel is taking most of it. So why would he threaten Elvis's health and career? So we concluded that there must have been more than that going on. And eventually that led us to discover a bit of a conspiracy based on a feud that went back several years. And that's one of the themes of this book.
So, yeah, you talk about the kind of vendetta that the movie director who was involved in a couple of Elvis's movies felt against the colonel. Was it the colonel? It is the colonel, right? That was yeah, that was his manager. That was Elvis's manager. And that a movie director actually had it in for the colonel and maybe may have thought that by ruining Elvis's career, he was getting back at what he thought was his stolen opportunity. His stolen opportunity to...
Yes.
Really make a fortune. So he sabotaged. I mean, that is one theory, correct?
And that's one of our theories. We've never been able to actually pinpoint the precise motivations, and certainly there may have been more than one, that would drive some of the really offensive actions that were taken against Elvis. They're so hard to fathom. It's just hard to imagine a motive that would be appropriate. But I think this particular movie producer, who is known as the king of the B-movies, the king of the cheap movies, who was brought in to produce Elvis movies as cheaply as possible so the colonel could make more money off of every dollar at the box office, Eventually did have a genuine feud with both the Colonel and with Elvis, who was quite a rebellious star in these movies and gave him a very hard time. So that may have been part of it as well. There could have been many things involved, but eventually this producer, and we actually name him in the book, I won't name him verbally here, but he employed a gang of individuals, a gang of gentlemen, I shouldn't call them gentlemen, who did his bidding. And so they certainly could have infiltrated Elvis's household at some point and tampered with some of the foodstuffs in the kitchen, for example. And they may have done some of the other things that, the very mysterious things that plagued Elvis and caused him a great deal of stress over this 5-year period, including phone calls and hangups. A rattlesnake that was concealed in his dressing room in the desert while he was making a movie called Joe, and other things. It's hard to know specifically if this gang was involved in all of these shenanigans, but on the other hand, they certainly may have been. And at some point after some of the more violent episodes, this producer actually confessed his involvement to Marlon Brando, who confronted him.
Wow. Well, there was no recording of that confession, however, right? I mean, just in Marlon's letters to Carmen, there was a reference to that, correct?
That's correct. This is all
right.
Their letters.
Yeah, right. So, and there was, without going into any detail, because it could be quite disturbing, what the listeners need to know is there is some sensational, really unbelievable things about Elvis's life. A little bit of it is known. For instance, we do know that he was not ever able to have really successful romantic relationships with women. His mother was the great love of his life. And after his marriage to Priscilla, what happened was she was reporting she was very unhappy, and he was depressed and attempted to kill himself after 6 months. And she was quite unhappy and feeling that, she had made a terrible mistake marrying this man. He was not a physical husband. He avoided being physical with her. And she was very disturbed by that. And given his lack of kind of emotional communication with women, I mean, he didn't even meet Carmen, his confidant. He wrote to her, and it was all letter writing. The one woman he loved was his mother. And when she died, he literally fell apart. So we know that much, right? I mean, Gary, that's safe stuff, right?
That's right. That's in the historical record.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's pretty safe. But what's not safe is some of the implications. Were these letters fantasies? Were they shared, were they shared fantasies with, Marlon Brando? Were they actually, in real life, what's the word I'm looking for? Were you able to document, were you able to ascertain the name of the individuals that were involved with some of these, really cruel and unsavory events that took place? So when we come back, we're going to take our another break. We've got 10 more minutes left. Boy, did this go by fast. I would like you to suggest, but I'm going to tell the listener, you really want to buy the book, okay? Seriously. I mean, this is one of those things like you're up in the wee hours of the morning going, no, that cannot be true. So when we come back from break, I'm going to ask you, Gary, to, without you know, giving too much away, because it is salacious. It's pretty salacious stuff. If you would give us a hint of some of the, you know, you talked about him being kind of a tortured soul and never finding his spiritual center. And he went through a lot of pain and suffering as a human being. So when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Gary about the letters that Elvis Presley wrote and the publication of Gary's new book, Letters from Elvis. Don't go away.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
we're back with Mr. Gary Lindberg, who is the, he is himself a number one best-selling author of four number one best-selling books, and he is the author of Shocking Revelations to His Secret Confidant, Letters from Elvis. Gary, before the break, we talked about some of the almost unbelievable. I mean, it could lead someone to say, come on, you know, this is ridiculous. And what's really wild is that he's got letters from his buddies that seem to affirm and seem to back up some of these stories. So do you want to give us just a little taste of that part of the book so that the listeners know what they might be in for?
Yes. I won't go into all of the ugly details, but one of the certainly the more fascinating episodes is the fact that when Elvis Presley finished shooting the movie Charo, the only movie in which he ever wore a beard and which was a Western and perhaps was his finest acting performance, in my estimation, he finished the movie, and instead of going home, he went to Palm Springs for a day or two, and he released his staff and his bodyguards, and he and Marlon hung out. He had just bought a new home, and things were being moved in, and there were some boxes from the old home that he didn't want the movers to move. So he and Marlon, imagine this scene, went off and rented a truck. Marlon Brando, perhaps the best actor of his age, and Elvis Presley, certainly the biggest singer of his age, renting a truck by themselves and then going and moving boxes from one house to his new house. They got the boxes to his new home, and they went into the kitchen. Remember, there's nobody in this house now because Elvis isn't expected to be there. And four men come into the house, and they kidnap Elvis and Marlon. And both of them write about this in detail. And Marlon writes in even more detail than Elvis. And they kidnap the two of them viciously. And they eventually take Marlon back to his mansion on Mulholland Drive and lock him in his bongo room. Imagine having a bongo room. But lock him in the room, in a closet in the bongo room, and tied up, and it takes him 3 hours to get out, whereupon he calls the police and calls Carmen Montez to see if she knows anything about this. And meanwhile, they take Elvis to a motel, but they are sure that some people have seen Elvis, whose, of course, face is very recognizable. So they decide to take him back to his empty home. And they spend the entire rest of the day and all night until early morning torturing him, brutally torturing Elvis Presley in ways that are unimaginable. Not only do they torture him, but I guess I can say this, they sexually assault him. There are 10 men in this gang, and they sexually assault him, sometimes with instruments.
And you and I talked about this in the pre-interview, and we talked about it, that it's really hard to know, because you said maybe there were 9 men, maybe there were 8 men. Did he count them? How did all of that really go down? And he didn't call the police because, you know, he would not want that to be known, et cetera, et cetera. The reports from the letters are so startling that it really does beg the reader to wonder what their own thoughts are about it. Yes, would you say that?
That's exactly right. I think everybody who reads these accounts, if they take into consideration that the letters have been highly authenticated by real world renowned experts, and that they corroborate each other, that Marlon's letters corroborate Elvis's, it's hard to dismiss them. Here's what we know for sure. Only Elvis was present during the torturing and the sexual assault. Marlin was not there because he had been dropped off at his mansion. And he was busy trying to figure out what happened to his good friend Elvis so he could perhaps save him. But finally, he discovers Elvis tied up, actually roped between the fireplace in the living room and a heavy dining room table, bleeding and in a sorry state, virtually almost dead. So something had happened. He had certainly been tortured. He had been beaten. He had... Marlin talks about blood coming from his rectum because he has no pants on. And so bad things certainly did happen to him. Whether Elvis's account of all the specific details are accurate, if he had been given drugs and didn't understand it, we certainly know from Marlin's account, eyewitness account, and describing the state of Elvis when he found him in his home and called the police, and we have the name of the chief who he called, and we know that the colonel also called the police and begged them not to release this information for fear that any mention of this kind of thing would tarnish Elvis's career. It's hard to dismiss the fact that very bad things happened. We may disagree. Now, did Elvis have rape fantasies? Did he infect Marlin with the belief, the delusions that he had? I certainly can't say. All I can report is exactly the details that Elvis and Marlin wrote about having occurred. And it's got to be up to everybody else to make a decision. But after this, Marlin was so upset because both of them knew who was behind this. Some of the producers' relatives were part of this gang, and we have their names. Marlin actually drove over to the producer's home, his mansion, and barged into the living room and found the producer there along with a couple of his thugs, and ended up having a verbal spat with them and ended up punching one of these guys in the mouth and was severely beaten himself and thrown out of the house. So essentially during that fight, the producer let him know that, yeah, of course he was behind this and he'd better watch himself too, because they could go after more than Elvis. So there was a warning delivered to Marlin as well. So there were a lot of things happening, and it was reported by at least several individuals, and it was reported to the police and covered up, and very bad things, very terrible, unspeakable things were done, I'm sure, to Elvis.
Wow. I have to tell you, I've never had an interview go by as quickly, Gary. This was like, I feel like we just started talking. It's mesmerizing. It's mesmerizing because what we call reality in the world we live in is so capricious. You know, what seems real about celebrities and about politicians and about other human beings is so often nothing resembling the truth. And your book, I have to tell you, people, I love reading, and this is a doozy. I will be up again tonight finishing this book. I highly recommend the book. It's very well done. You're a wonderful writer. And, you know, I just have to congratulate you as someone who's written a book myself. I have to congratulate you on your commitment and tenacity to get this book done. And I cannot wait to see what kind of reactions come out of this, Gary, because I think it's going to be sensational. I'm so glad you decided to make the time. I know how busy you are, and I know we had to squeeze this in. I'm so glad that you've taken the time to join us today on Living Above the Drama.
I appreciate it very much.
Oh, believe me, it's my pleasure. And good luck with this soon-to-be-published book. Listeners, don't forget to come back again next week for another exciting, titillating, possibly, but definitely inspiring program on Living Above the Drama.